Hi everyone, this is Diana Shea of Philosophy in Action. This podcast is the free preview of a lecture that I gave back in March of 2012 on the concept of moral perfection. The lecture was entitled, Should You Try to Be Morally Perfect? Now, the full version of this is available for sale. I'm going to say a little bit more about that in a moment. This is just the free preview. But this was a lecture that I gave at the University of Colorado at Boulder as part of their Think series of philosophy lectures for general audience, which I actually used to be the graduate student assistant for, so it was fun to come back as a speaker. So here's the abstract. Most people dismiss any ideal of moral perfection as beyond their reach. I'm only human, they say. That view is a legacy of Christianity, which teaches that moral perfection is possible to God alone, and that any attempt at moral perfection is the sin of pride. In sharp contrast, Ayn Rand argues that moral perfection is not only possible to ordinary people, but also necessary for anyone who wants to live a virtuous and happy life. Hence, pride, understood as moral ambitiousness, is one of her seven major virtues, as seen in the heroes of her novels The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. This talk explores Ayn Rand's views of moral perfection, ambition, and pride. What does she think that morality demands? How can people achieve that? How should people respond to their own moral wrongs and errors? We will compare Rand's answers to these questions to those of Aristotle. We will find that, despite some differences in each philosopher's conception of virtue, they share the compelling view that seeking moral perfection is crucially important to a person's life and happiness. This preview runs about 14 minutes, and it covers the question, what is perfection? The full lecture is 90 minutes long, and it includes a Q&A at the end, as well as the slides that I used when giving the lecture live. You can purchase access to that full lecture for just $10, and to do that, all you need to do is visit philosophyinaction.com/perfection. Again, philosophyinaction.com/perfection. However, if you're a regular contributor to Philosophy in Action's tip jar, it's free for you. So in that case, just shoot me an email to request access, and I will send you back instructions. Now, time for the preview.
And so tonight, Diana is going to talk to us on the topic of should you try to be morally perfect? And she's going to be talking about Ayn Rand and Aristotle. So, welcome, Diana.
Thank you very much. Okay, so my talk tonight is on should you try to be morally perfect? And there can be a subtext here of if you try, can you actually accomplish this? And I want to start off by thinking about the imperfect world in which we live. People every day, they cheat on their spouses. Workers steal from their employers. People don't live up to their promises. And in fact, they make promises knowing that they're going to break them. Parents neglect and abuse their children. People betray their supposed friends, people who they claim to be their friends. Students, this might be familiar to you guys, students sometimes party rather than study. I'm sure there might be a little bit of experience with this phenomenon, at least by acquaintance. People silently, they permit injustices, they don't speak up while bad things are happening, and a whole lot more. So this is the depressing state of our imperfect world here. And there are a lot of really common responses to this. One strain of response, not the only response, but one strain of response is to say, well, we're only human. Nobody's perfect. You know, people, they're doing their best. You just shouldn't expect so much. You know, why should you expect your friends to live up to their promises? Or if you're of a Christian strain or if you're in a Christian community, you're going to hear things like, we're all sinners or we're all born sinners. Human nature is inherently depraved. Basically, in a nutshell, the strain of this set of views is moral perfection, it's impossible, it's unrealistic, stop expecting it, don't be a moron. And meanwhile, in academic philosophy, we actually see a similar kind of view. I outlined in actually one of my favorite articles in contemporary ethics, which is Susan Wolf's Moral Saints article. So basically, what Susan Wolf does in this article is she outlines what a moral saint would be like. And by a moral saint, she means somebody who is perfectly altruistic, somebody whose whole purpose in life is to promote the welfare of others. So we have two varieties of saints on her view. The loving saint is somebody who really, really enjoys making other people happy, of committing to their welfare. And so this person does that out of this kind of overflowing love. The rational saint isn't so thrilled about it. He dislikes helping others, but he's going to do so because he thinks it's the right thing to do. Now, Susan Wolf's core thesis in this article is that to be a moral saint, well, if we really look at what it would be like in concrete terms, what it would take to achieve that level of moral sainthood, it wouldn't be really desirable. It wouldn't be particularly psychologically healthy. It wouldn't be very, very appealing, not just in ourselves, but even in other people. We wouldn't want our friends, our associates, our coworkers to be moral saints either. And what Susan Wolf concludes out of this, and this is where I think the article goes wrong, is basically to say that there are limits to how much morality we can stand. We just can't take people who are that moral. So forget about being a moral saint. Don't do that. Now, in contrast with this strain of views, Ayn Rand is going to take a radically different view on moral perfection. She's going to say that moral perfection is not just possible to ordinary people. We're not talking, she gets accused of elitism a lot, so I want to make clear, she's talking about ordinary, regular Joe Schmoes like us, that it's not just possible to us, but it's necessary for every person's life and happiness to be pursuing and even achieving this kind of moral perfection. That this is essential to a person's life and happiness. And what she's in fact going to say, and we're going to obviously unpack this during the course of the lecture, is that this quest for moral perfection, this aiming at moral perfection, is going to be a major aspect of one of her major virtues, namely the virtue of pride, which is probably not what you think it is. It's a virtue of being morally ambitious. So what I want to do tonight is unpack Ayn Rand's views by looking at five questions here. What is perfection? What is moral perfection on Ayn Rand's view if we take this really broadly? Then we're going to narrow it down and hone in and see there's one thing that's the essence of moral perfection. What is that? Then we're going to look at how we achieve moral perfection, and finally, why we should think moral perfection is necessary at all. So let's start off with just what perfection is. And I'm actually going to start off with a dictionary definition, because I'm going to make I think they're going to be a little bit startling claims about what perfection is. And I actually think that these are, in fact, ways that we use perfection in ordinary language. So I'm not making some weirdo technical definition. This is actually how we do use perfection in ordinary discourse. So the three dictionary definitions of perfection, at least on my Mac, were, quote, having all the required or desirable elements or qualities, as good as it is possible to be. In other words, the idea here is that it's complete. Something is perfect if it's complete, if it's lacking nothing. Another definition, free from any flaw or defect in condition or quality, faultless. So faultless, flawless, that's the basic idea here. And three, highly suitable for someone or something, exactly right. So this is something that's a perfect fit for its context. So the definition, though, that I'm going to be using is one that kind of draws on all three, or at least incorporates all three. This is based on a definition by objectivist philosopher Harry Binswanger in his essay, The Possible Dream. And the definition is that perfection is the flawlessly complete satisfaction of the relevant standards of value in a given context. Well, so, okay, that's a little bit dense, and what the heck does that mean? That's our next question. So let's start off with a tried and true, easy case of perfection. When I thought of perfection, I'm thinking, what are my examples? This is what I Googled. I Googled Mary Lou Retton. In the 1984 Olympics, when I was a wee little child, U.S. gymnast Mary Lou Retton received a perfect 10 on a vault. And she did this amazingly. I watched the video. I'd highly recommend going and Google or looking on YouTube for this video, because it's really phenomenal to watch it again if you haven't seen it since 1984. She did this vault perfectly. And she lands it, and she sticks it, and she knows she's got it. And then she goes out, and she does exactly the same vault, and she does it in exactly the same way. She did it perfectly twice. It was amazing. It was great. And so to see this, basically the reason why Mary Lou's vault was perfect was it was highly technical. That's actually one of the ways in which gymnastics is scored, is there's only a possibility of a certain number of points based on how technical the vault is. So the vault was highly technical. And it was performed without flaw according to the standards of gymnastics. Now, note something about this. There's a lesson we want to draw here. Mary Lou's vault is judged as perfect based on what human gymnasts can do on Earth, for example. It doesn't matter if aliens on a low-gravity planet who were capable of using telekinesis could do a better vault. It just doesn't matter, right? We need to be realistic. For basically, for the concept of perfection to be meaningful, for it to be useful to us, for it to be something that we can use in our everyday life, the standard for perfection have to be based on reality. They have to be based on actual facts about what is possible, not based on fantasies or what-ifs. So forget the aliens here. Here's another example of perfection, a more modest one, if I may say so myself, my breakfast this morning. Those of you who know me on Facebook know I can't stop talking about bacon because it's really my favorite thing. So here we go. I'm going to talk, and I can't stop talking about bacon. So I ate my perfect breakfast this morning. It was bacon cooked in a glass pan in the oven, gently cooked to this perfect, crispy perfection. And I had half a grapefruit too. And it was tasty. It was healthy, although the vegetarians in the audience might disagree with me on that. And it was quick. It was a perfect breakfast. It wasn't the fanciest breakfast. It wasn't, you know, you can imagine all kinds of other breakfasts that you might want. But this, given what I wanted this morning, this was, in fact, the perfect breakfast for me. So this is another point about perfection. Perfection often depends on the context. It's often highly personal. So what counts as perfection depends upon facts about a person, including, in this case, what my goals were, what my resources were, what my preferences were, facts about my circumstances, about my skills, my obligations, and so on. All of these things factor in, and these facts are particular to my context of here, I'm making breakfast, what am I going to have? So as a result of this, your perfect breakfast might differ from mine. I'm pretty sure that Alistair's perfect breakfast differs from mine.
Small.
And perfection doesn't, and it's also another point about this, is that perfection doesn't just apply to those rare achievements. It doesn't just apply to those times when you're in front of a camera and you're a gymnast and you're on the world stage. Perfection can be really modest. It can be something very small that you don't need to go to the rooftops and shout about unless you're on Facebook and you're me and you're like, I had bacon again. So, but it's important to note that this doesn't make perfection into merely a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. This bacon and the bacon and the grapefruit satisfied all of my criteria for breakfast. It's a factual matter. Okay, another example of perfection. So here we have two paintings of a happy family. One, as you might notice, is a little bit less technical or less accomplished than the other. But I think that both, you can regard both the child's painting and the artist's painting as perfect. Well, how so? I think that basically the works of a novice can be perfect even if they're below the standards for the perfection that you would expect of an expert, if it is the case that they did the best that they could possibly do. And I remember as a little kid working really hard to color in the lines. That was a real big accomplishment for me when I was able to do that. And when I was able to do that, that was a perfect coloring. And basically what we can expect is the standards for perfection, for what counts as perfection, that's going to progress as a person develops his knowledge and his skills. So a person can do something perfectly now, but a year from now, that same performance would no longer be perfect. It might be that if they're practicing, if they're developing their skills, they can and ought to do better in the future. And this, I've noticed this, I took up snowboarding this year, and I noticed this even just from one run to the next as I'm learning to snowboard. And those of you who've learned to snowboard know how painfully difficult it is and how easy it is to plant your face in the snow. And so that when you're on that steep learning curve, and every run you're increasing your skills a little bit, and you can say, I had that perfect run at 11 a.m., and you had a significantly better run at 3 in the afternoon, but both of those were perfect, because both of those were the best that you could possibly do at that very time. But this doesn't mean that perfection is an easy standard to meet. Certainly, I've had plenty of imperfect runs snowboarding as well. It has to be for perfection that you could not have been able to do better. Okay, so that is perfection. Perfection is the flawlessly complete satisfaction of the relevant standards of value in a given context. And I think the critical things that I wanted to get out of this were that the proper standards for perfection, they need to be realistic, they need to be contextual, and we're going to have to expect that they're going to change with time. And the other point is that perfection is achievable even in daily life, even in small and ordinary ways. Now, if you're interested in more on this what counts as perfection issue, I'd recommend this article by Harry Binsmeyer called The Possible Dream in the Objectivist Form. He's talking not just about moral perfection, but perfection in general and political perfection and so on. So I do want to mention, before we move on to moral perfection, that seeking perfection is not always good. So you see, I Googled for organized closet, and there's 50 bajillion images of these perfectly organized closets. You'll notice that this one, it's not even just organized in that, like, there's space in between each item of clothing, but, like, the colors all go together nicely, right? I didn't take a picture of my closet because that would have actually been embarrassing. The point here is that perfection is, it may be possible, but it's not desirable. I could do this to my closet, but oh my God, what a waste of time. Right? Sometimes, given that your resources are limited, sometimes good enough is in fact the best. So it's really important to know, when do I need to aim for perfection, and when is good enough good enough? And one of the difficulties that people have is with something that gets talked about as perfectionism. Basically, it means a person is seeking perfection when it's inappropriate, when it's unrealistic. They need their closet to look like this even though they have a test tomorrow, right? That would be perfectionism. That's a certain kind of moral or psychological problem that is... So just because I think perfection is good doesn't mean that I think that perfectionism or always seeking perfection is always the right thing to do. Okay. So that's perfection. Now what we need to do is look at what is moral perfection in this broad way. We're going to start off in a looser kind of way and get narrowed down as we go.
That's it for the preview. As you heard, this preview contains the introduction as well as the discussion of the first question, what is perfection? I covered four other questions in this lecture. What is moral perfection broadly? What is moral perfection essentially? How is moral perfection achieved? And why is moral perfection necessary? Again, this was the free preview of my March 2012 lecture on the concept of moral perfection entitled, Should You Try to Be Morally Perfect? The full 90-minute lecture with slides is available for sale for $10. To purchase it, just visit philosophyinaction.com/perfection. Again, philosophyinaction.com/perfection. Finally, if you're a regular contributor to our tip jar, please remember to shoot me an email to request access. I will be more than happy to give you that for free. Thanks, everyone. Bye.